Good evening and welcome to Senator Mike Crapo's live iTown Hall conference call. This is Susan Wheeler, Senator Crapo's communications director, and I'll be your moderator this evening. Thank you for joining us tonight, and we hope you find this call informative and useful. Coming up will be a live question and answer session with Senator Crapo, and it will last about an hour. Senator Crapo will be joining us soon, but first I want to give you a short rundown of how the next hour will proceed. You are connected to Senator Crapo's live iTown Hall conference call. In order to allow everyone to hear, you are in listen-only mode. In other words, you can hear me, but I cannot hear you, nor can you hear each other. Many of you may have participated in a town hall meeting at a local community center or city hall in the past. This technology takes that format into the 21st century, using the telephone and Internet to put thousands of Idahoans on a conference call with Senator Crapo. He hosts calls like this about once a quarter. Throughout the call, you are invited to join in with a question or concern. If you would like to ask a question, please press *3 on your telephone keypad. You will then be transferred to one of our staff members who will get some brief information from you, basically your name and your question. So if you'd like to ask a question, you need to press *3. As I mentioned, this call will last about an hour, and you can stay with us as long as you wish. We hope it will be the full hour. During the call, it might work well for you to place the call on speakerphone if you have that capability, and it makes it easier for you to listen. And since the senator would like to get to as many of your questions as possible, we'll try to move quickly. If you aren't interested in asking a question tonight, you are certainly welcome to stay with us and learn about the issues confronting our country. Senator Crapo is now waiting to hear from you, and our phone lines are open. Remember to press *3 if you're interested in asking a question, and you'll be transferred into the question queue. With that, let's welcome Senator Crapo to the iTown Hall meeting. Senator, good evening. Thanks for taking time out of your schedule. I know that you were just watching the president give his address with regard to the economic situations, and I'm sure you have a lot to say about that.
Well, definitely, and thank you, Susan. I appreciate the opportunity to visit with people from all over Idaho through this new technology. We've found that it gives us a tremendous opportunity to allow people from Idaho to have much more contact. Excuse me. And I look forward to these opportunities. Tonight is a very timely occasion for us to have this town meeting because, as I believe most people realize, the nation is facing very, very serious economic threat, and major proposals for action by Congress are before us, and the president has just spoken to the country. In addition, earlier today, both Barack Obama and John McCain have come together and issued a joint statement indicating that they will come to Washington, D.C. tomorrow together to meet with the president and with the leadership of both the Republican and Democrat parties in the House and the Senate to try to work out a bipartisan solution to this very, very serious issue. I personally have spent a lot of time working very hard on this specific issue, not only because of my personal interest in it, but also because the issue is before the Banking Committee on which I sit. And as we move forward, I expect we'll get a lot of questions tonight on the issue. I think what I'd like to do right now is to just lay out some of the thoughts that I have at this point and then discuss in more detail the specifics of the concerns that people may have. I'd also like to indicate that this town hall meeting is not limited to only the bailout issue. It is it's an open forum, and we can talk about energy policy, our national defense, homeland security, or any of the other issues that people would like to hear about. Let me just briefly right now discuss my feelings about the proposal that we have on the table before us to provide up to $700 billion to purchase distressed real estate assets, particularly securitized mortgages that are illiquid and have no real value in the marketplace. I have very, very strong concerns about this proposal, and at this point, I do not think that it is the right solution. There's no question that our country faces a very, very serious economic threat and that Congress does need to act. But I believe we've got to take the time to carefully evaluate all options and make sure that we make the right decisions as we move forward. The primary reason that I don't think we've got the right solution yet is that the proposal before us would put the taxpayer in the position of essentially picking up the risk in an entire segment of our economy of illiquid assets that the private sector will not purchase. The hope that has been expressed with regard to this plan is that these assets, which are now illiquid, would ultimately regrow into their normal value as the economy stabilizes. And certainly one would hope that that would be the case. But the reason that many others are not willing to buy them in the private sector is because there is not a high level of confidence that that would be the case. And the bottom line to me is that's a risk. It's a huge risk. It's a risk that could be up to $700 billion for the U.S. taxpayer. And it puts the U.S. taxpayer right at the front of the line in terms of the risk taking and the losses that will occur in the economy. I believe that the companies that have incurred these illiquid investments, whether they did so through mismanagement or not, must be the ones who absorb the risk first. If it becomes necessary to stabilize our economy for the U.S. taxpayer to help try to provide some liquidity to the system, then any dollars, any value that the U.S. taxpayer is called upon to put in my opinion, should be done in a format where it is preferred debt and in which the taxpayers are paid back first. And only after the taxpayers are paid back from company-wide assets only after the shareholders and the other owners of any of these distressed assets incur the losses that are there, should the taxpayer face the risk. The taxpayer, in my opinion, should be first and last. And what I mean by that is the taxpayer should be paid back first and should incur losses last among those who are involved in managing and handling these assets. And again, because the proposal that's before us puts the taxpayer in the front of the line in terms of the risk, I have very strong concerns with it. I also frankly believe that as we move forward, we've got to do so in a fashion that recognizes the importance that any approach we take must be as temporary as possible so that the federal government does not become permanently enmeshed in the private sector. Our system of government is one that has relied on a strong and robust private market, and as little federal intervention, governmental intervention in the market as possible. And that's why I believe that if these very, very unusual and dangerous circumstances might require some effort to make sure we maintain liquidity in the market and protect American taxpayers, we must do so only in a way that shields them from the greatest amount of risk and minimizes the amount of involvement of the federal government. With that, like I say, I'll be glad to answer any questions on any issues, but let's go to the questions right now and see if we can be sure we get through as many as possible.
Well, thank you, Senator Crapo. For those of you who are just joining us tonight, you're participating in Senator Mike Crapo's iTown Hall meeting. I'm Susan Wheeler, the Senator's Communications Director and your moderator. This call will last about an hour. If you'd like to ask Senator Crapo a question, please press *3. To be placed into the question queue, and you can do that at any time during the call, and you'll be able to continue listening to the call as long as, unless you're talking to our screeners. Senator Crapo, I know that this financial issue has taken up a lot of your time in the last few days. I believe it was a five-hour hearing yesterday. We're going to take our first question from Diane, although your opening remarks may have answered her question. Diane, go ahead.
Yes, well, now I've got another question.
All right, go ahead.
What is the risk of recession, and how can we avoid that walking on this thin line that we're riding here?
Well, unfortunately, Diane, I think the president in his speech just now very clearly laid out that the risk of a major economic freeze up of our credit system, which could lead to a recession, is very real.
Yeah.
And it's hard to put any kind of a statistical percentage on that, but I believe Americans must all recognize that we face a very, very serious economic threat, potentially the most serious economic threat that we have faced in this century. I mean, in the last 50 to 100 years, and that we've got to realize that the nature of this threat is extreme. In terms of your question as to how we should approach this issue, let me just clarify a little bit about what I just said. It may be necessary, because of the extreme nature of this circumstance, that the best decision is for the federal government on a temporary basis to provide some liquidity so that the markets do not freeze up and we can avoid the kind of economic collapse that would then follow. But if that is done, like I said before, we should not do so in a way that puts the United States government into ownership of illiquid assets. That simply places the entire risk on the taxpayer. Instead, the United States Treasury and the taxpayer should be put into a preferred debt position in which the repayment out of the value of the assets and the entire economic potential of the companies involved would be made first to the taxpayer. And I believe that that can provide the liquidity and also assure that the taxpayer's risk of loss is dramatically reduced.
Well, as you would expect, a lot of the questions that we have tonight have to do with this financial crisis. And so for the next question, we're going to go to Boise. Whitney, you have a question for Senator Kraper? Whitney, I think you need to turn down radio or something. We're getting a lot of feedback. Whitney? I guess we weren't able to take her. Senator, you did spend a great deal of time yesterday in a hearing with Ben Bernanke and Henry Paulson. Perhaps you can give us a short little synopsis of what you learned and how that whole process proceeded for you.
Well, that process, it was a 4.5 or 5 hour hearing, and in addition to the Secretary of the Treasury, Henry Paulson, and the Chairman of the Federal Reserve, Henry Bernanke, we also had the Chairman of the Securities and Exchange Commission, Chris Cox, and the new manager of Fannie and Freddie, Lockhart. And basically, the entire banking committee spent the 4.5 hours grilling them, I think, quite extensively on the details of the proposal. And let me again just explain a little bit of the difference between some of the ideas. Some people, and very strong economic experts on all sides, believe that if we are able to stop a so-called run on the banks that would cause many, many banks to fail and cause the money market system in the country to freeze up, that we need to extend protection to deposits at those types of institutions, banks and money market funds. Banks are already protected under the FDIC up to $100,000 of investment of an account for each investor. Money market funds are not insured. And so one of the ideas that, frankly, is getting a lot of support in Washington is to, again, temporarily extend that federal backup to money market funds so that people are willing to just keep their money in the bank or in the money market funds rather than pulling it out. And I believe that's an important first step that probably we can get very broad support for among all parties. The real conflict comes in the proposal that the federal government step in with up to $700 billion. Many people think that proposal was to purchase, not to purchase, but to prop up failing companies. And actually, propping up failing companies that are going to damage the economy is one of the proposals that is on the table, but it's not the Treasury proposal. The Treasury proposal was to purchase illiquid assets from hundreds and hundreds of companies across the market, whether they are potentially in a failure mode or not, in an effort to get those illiquid assets out of the economy and allow the government to hold them to maturity. And then hopefully the taxpayer is going to recover on those assets if they are held to maturity and the market stabilizes. And again, I know I'm being very repetitive, but that part of the plan has me very concerned because there's a great risk there, and I don't believe that the taxpayer is the one who should be put into the position of holding that risk.
Well, we're going to take a question that has to do with that. Jeannie from Boise, or Jean, I'm sorry, from Boise, you have a question for Senator Crapo?
I do?
Yes, Jean.
Go right ahead.
Jeannie.
Jeannie, okay.
I want I want to know what the government's going to do with these CEOs that have totally ripped off the working man and been greedy. What are we going to do to these people that manipulated us Americans?
That's an excellent question, and there are several aspects of it. There is an investigation currently underway to determine whether any of the actions that were undertaken by those who were investing in or working in the stock market or in other aspects of the economy were done in an illegal way that illegally manipulated values and caused some of these problems. We don't have the answer yet to whether and if so to what extent there were outright illegal activities that took place, but that investigation is underway, and if there are illegal acts identified, there will be very aggressive prosecutions. The other part of your question deals with, I think, is aimed at the issue of some of the CEOs of these companies who have extremely exorbitant salaries and what we call golden parachutes, tens of millions of dollars of payments to be made to them upon their exit from the company. And frankly, Americans from all parts of the country are outraged by the fact that there could be this kind of mismanagement in some of these companies with such incredibly high salaries being paid to the very CEOs who were in charge of what happened. I strongly believe, and I also think that this is something we will be able to get consensus on, that the CEOs of any companies who the federal taxpayers have to step in and help out, first of all, must leave and must be replaced, and secondly, must not be allowed to have these golden parachutes. If taxpayer dollars are brought into play, then I think the taxpayers have a right to say that their dollars should not pay for these kinds of outlandish salary arrangements. For those companies where the taxpayer dollars are not used, the issue is one, in my opinion, of a shareholder management issue. The shareholders of these companies are going to have to become much more aggressive in insisting that the board of directors and the managers of the company refuse to engage in these kinds of outrageous compensation packages. But one way or the other, I feel pretty confident that any legislation that Congress may come up with will contain provisions to assure that the CEOs are removed from their positions and are deprived from obtaining their golden parachute packages.
Now for the next question, we're going to go to Orwin. Once again, also on the subject of the financial crisis. Go ahead, Orwin.
Yeah. Since we're in a recession already, I don't understand why we can't just let Fannie Mae and the other one, can't remember the name.
Freddie Mac.
Just let them go broke. Freddie Mac, thank you. I'd like to see him go broke because if it was the other way around, that's what would happen to me.
Well, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right, Orwin, about the fact that the help wouldn't necessarily go the other way, although I do believe in this package there's going to be a lot of discussion about how to help those who are in distressed mortgages in their own family circumstances. But let me explain why generally I think that that's exactly what should happen, is that we should allow the marketplace to operate. And, you know, the invisible hand of the market will find the equilibrium and the balance in circumstances where there have been excesses like this. The reason that the decision was made by the Treasury and the Federal Reserve to not let Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac go down was, as the President explained earlier, and as I believe most of the economic experts have agreed, that they held something like 80% of all of the mortgage security, not the securities themselves, but they backed up most of the mortgages that had been issued in our country. And had they gone down, the economic ripples, I won't even say ripples, the convulsions that would have gone through our economy as a result of that would have been so harmful to the American taxpayer, and not just to the taxpayers, but literally to all Americans who are engaged in economic activity in our country, that the damage just could not be ignored. And so what has been done is the CEOs of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have been removed. Their exorbitant golden parachute salary arrangements have been what's called clawed back, meaning stopped. And new management has been put in place. And now what is happening is a more orderly reduction of their portfolio and their operations is being systematically undertaken by new managers who are going to try to help basically cause to what would have happened in a very, very dangerous way to happen and start to downsize them and move them back into more of a position where we can just let the market take its course and allow normal activities to resume. So really the bottom line question or answer to your question is that we face such an incredibly extreme risk in our economy that the damage to all Americans from allowing that to happen would just outweighed the principles of allowing what may happen without any intervention to occur. Now, I know many people say, well, it should just have been allowed anyway, but I don't think they would have said that after the consequences started happening, because, like I said, these consequences would have been far and wide throughout the U.S. economy and would have thrown us into a major economic recession, the likes of which we haven't seen since 1929 and maybe not even in 1929.
For the next question, we're going to go to Twin Falls. Evelyn, you have a question for Senator Crapo. Go ahead.
Yes, I was going to say that I agree with the money market thing that they're talking about. That
yes.
I think that that's a good idea. Other than that, I think these CEOs are just awful. I think they have taken advantage of everybody, and I think they all need to be dismissed, and I don't think they've made money for their stockholders. I think they've taken it all themselves, and their packages when they leave are just exorbitant, and I think that's terrible. And another thing, I think that they need to do something rather fast with giving some money into this system to keep the liquidity. I think if they don't, they're making a big mistake. But I also think that they need to watch and have a special board like they did over the SNL problem that they had. They have a special board that's free of the Congress and free of everybody else and looks into how this money is spent and what happens to it. That's free from everybody, but a whole big board of them, not just one person.
You know, Evelyn,
that's my question. I think, are they going to talk this to death for the next 2 weeks, or are they going to get moving?
Are they going to do something? I certainly hope, first of all, let me say, Evelyn, that I agree with each of the sentiments that you have expressed. And I hope that Congress will act expeditiously. I think that given what the president said tonight and the fact that John McCain and Barack Obama have agreed to come and participate significantly increases the potential that Congress can come together on a plan and move together rapidly. Barack Obama and John McCain put out a statement earlier today that listed some principles by which we should address this issue. And I think their principles are pretty sound as well. I'd encourage everyone to take a look at those. With regard to your point about the money market funds, again, I agree with you. That was a step that probably will not end up costing the taxpayer anything, but which will stabilize a significant part of this problem without any need for a bailout of a company or anything of the sort. It's already been undertaken through regulatory action by the Department of Treasury, backed up by other actions by the Federal Reserve Board. And it is already providing a level of confidence in the marketplaces that is stopping runs on banks that could have been occurring as early as last Thursday or Friday. And so I'm glad that that did take place. And again, I also agree with your points about the CEOs. Once again, if the federal taxpayer gets involved in putting any resources into any of these companies, I think it's very clear that the CEO should be removed and that their compensation package is taken away from them. For those that are managed by shareholders and not involved with the federal treasury, I think the shareholders of those companies should get engaged and impose the same type of swift action.
Well, as expected, we have a lot of folks who want to ask you questions about this particular issue. And so those of you who are in the question queue and waiting to be screened, we appreciate your patience. We'll try to get to you as soon as we can. We do only this call is going to only be an hour, and we are getting close to about halfway through that. So we're going to try and make sure that we cover as much of the subjects as folks are asking about. So if your question has already been asked a little bit, we might move on to another question. But this right now we're going to go to John in McCall. You have a question for Senator Crapo? Go ahead.
Yes, Senator, first of all, thank you for this forum.
Sure.
My question is, how much is the confidence should we have and do you have in this $700 billion figure? It seems to me that, you know, if that number isn't correct, then a few weeks, a few months down the road, we're back dealing with this again and, you know, another crisis.
I think, go ahead.
I'm just concerned about, because of the lack of oversight, you know, how do we know that that number is good?
Well, John, you have raised a critical question that I don't know the answer to, and the fact that I can't give you the answer to that means that we don't have the answer, because, like I said, I sit on the committee that has been at the center of evaluating this. What we are hearing from the Department of Treasury and from the Federal Reserve is that this is their best estimate of what is needed, and they are saying that they think it's a very bold action, and of course it is, but they're saying that they believe that they most likely would not need to use more than $700 billion. But just the fact that even they, in testimony before the committee, could not state with certainty that $700 billion was enough raises an additional reason to me for us to be very careful and prudent as we evaluate this in Congress. And recall my earlier points at the beginning of the town meeting. The approach that is being taken here is one of trying to eliminate the illiquid assets in an entire segment of our market, not just with regard to a couple of companies that might be too big to fail, so to speak, or might have such a major impact on the economy that we should try to provide some liquidity to them. This is an effort to remove failing assets or distressed assets from an entire segment of our economy, the securitized mortgages. And the scope of that is so large that it's very difficult to know whether $700 billion is enough. Frankly, we already know that there are maybe twice as many distressed mortgages than that amount, mortgage securities. And so it's an excellent question, and it's one that should cause us very, very serious pause as we evaluate whether to take this market-wide approach to providing liquidity from the taxpayer as opposed to an approach that simply strengthens the money market funds and assures that they don't fall, and then works on an individual basis if there are pieces of the economy that are of the financial sector that need to have some liquidity provided to them.
All right, our next question is from Ketchum. Rob, you have a question for Senator Crapo.
I sure do. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Senator, I'm a Crapo fan from
way back.
I'm one of those people who votes for you every time. So it's a friendly question.
I appreciate that.
I'm also
Although maybe a tough question, right?
I'm also an independent.
Uh-huh.
But I'm a Crapo voter, okay?
Thank you. Thank you.
And this is part of the reason. I've watched you in that committee over the last couple of days, and I'm very impressed, as I always have been. I'm also impressed by Hank Paulson,
mm-hmm.
and I'm a big admirer of his. He is saying to us, and he didn't just fall off a turnip truck, as you know.
Right.
He is a distinguished financial guy, and he is saying, if I understand him correctly, we've got to do this. We have got to do it at this amount, and we have to do it quickly. Now, this may touch on your last answer. I don't know because I couldn't hear the dialogue, okay?
Okay.
So bear with me.
Sure.
But what is your take on that? Are you, is there not the opportunity to make, to step up and make the commitment in line with what Hank Paulson is suggesting, and then do the actual draws in tranches?
Actually, there's several pieces of the answer to your question. Let me say, first of all, thank you for your kind comments. And I,
well, they're true.
Well, thank you. I share your impression of Hank Paulson. A lot of people are very critical of him because they think that, you know, he came from Wall Street and therefore he's suspect. But I'll tell you, I think he's trying to do what he believes is the right thing, and he is an incredibly intelligent and capable Secretary of Treasury. And so when he speaks and when he testified, I listened very, very closely. Now, as I've said, I also am not convinced yet. I think that there are other options. And I have talked to dozens and dozens of experts, whether they be economists or whether they be practitioners in different parts of our financial markets and so forth. But over the last week or two, I have talked to dozens of people who are also very, very capable and competent. And I think the answer to your question is, yes, we have to act. I believe that the threat is so serious that for us to simply step back and say, let's let consequences flow without any effort to provide some liquidity would be devastating to the economy, and we would face the kind of economic consequences that Hank Paulson is telling us we are looking at. I do believe he is accurate about that. Where I haven't yet become convinced is I haven't become convinced that the only way to solve this is the way he is suggesting. There are other experts who say there are other ways, and there is disagreement among very, very capable economic players about this. And so to a certain extent, this is going to involve members of Congress and members of the administration, and in this case, two presidential candidates as well as many others, sitting down and giving their best effort to make sure we do what protects America, regardless of party affiliation or political consequence. And I personally am not convinced yet that the $700 billion approach is the right approach. But I do hear you, and I'm willing to sit down and roll up my sleeves and work with my colleagues on both sides of the aisle and both sides of the rotunda and in the White House and the administration to make sure that we do everything we can to act prudently and promptly. But I also believe we've got to carefully evaluate all the alternatives and just make sure we've got it right.
Well, I feel we should mention that I'm going to guess that we're not going to make it to everybody's questions because we only have about 25 minutes left in the call. And we will be trying to, at the end of the call, if you're still on the line, there's an opportunity for you to leave a voicemail message for Senator Crapo that we'll be responding to as well. So if we don't have the opportunity to take your call, please stay with us and leave us that message. For the next call, we'll go to Christy in Idaho Falls. Do you have a question?
Hi, Senator Crapo.
Yes.
My concern, I believe that we have, that we'll find a solution to this problem that may be have painful consequences to all of us, but it will be solved. And what I'd like to hear you comment on is what kinds of changes do you think are required in our financial system and the regulations that govern it that will avoid us being in this same situation down the road?
That is an excellent question, Christy, and a lot of thought has gone into this, not only by myself, but by very, very good thinkers like Hank Paulson, our Secretary of Treasury, and others. And let me just say this. We have a regulatory system in the United States that is outdated. It was crafted 40, 50 years ago when the economy and the markets didn't even resemble the type of economy and markets that we have today. It is not set up to deal with them. And as a result of that, not only do we have the inability to have the effective oversight of our markets and market participants that we need, we also create burdens for our markets and our market participants that is literally driving business, driving entrepreneurs, driving investors and companies off of our soil to other more advanced and reasonable marketplaces. For example, excuse me, London is picking up a lot of our economic activity because they recently revised their financial system in a way that has made it possible for them to be much more effective and efficient. Now, what am I talking about in more specifics? Today, depending on what kind of financial activity you are engaged in, you could deal with as many as 7 different federal regulators and a whole panoply of different regulatory requirements, and yet you could also be engaged in certain very critical economic activity that is totally unregulated. What we need to do, in my opinion, is we need to simplify and streamline our regulatory system. In some places, we need to establish stronger regulatory oversight, such as with regard to Fannie and Freddie, which, by the way, we've had legislation to do now for 6 or 7 years. We finally got it passed a few months ago. If we'd have passed it a few years ago, we'd have been well down the line in solving this problem, and it wouldn't be nearly what it is today. There are other parts of our financial system that need to have regulatory oversight where today there is none. And then we need to reduce the number of regulators and move to a principles-based system of regulation rather than one that's based so much on litigation and sort of a gotcha mentality. Those kinds of things are, we could get into more details, but let me just say that a very good analysis of this was put out by Hank Paulson, who our previous caller indicated has a lot of tremendous capability. He put out a blueprint, and I would encourage you, if you're interested in a more detailed answer than I'm giving you right now, months and months ago, the Treasury Department under Hank Paulson put out a blueprint that said we've got to streamline, improve, and modernize our regulatory system in the following ways. And it goes into everything from dealing with the enforcement side at the SEC to the oversight of our exchanges, our over-the-counter, and our regulated markets and so forth. And we have plans and approaches that are in place for us to do that. We need to be aggressive about making sure that however we approach this current crisis, that once we have dealt with it, and I agree with you, we will deal with it. Once we have dealt with it, we can't let the moment pass without making sure that we then move forward to modernize our regulatory structure.
Our next call, and as you would expect, we are still on financial issues, is from Twin Falls. Doug, you have a question for Senator Crapo.
Yes, Senator Crapo, good to talk to you.
It's good to talk to you. Thank you.
Hey, my question or comment would be, based on what we've heard so far, $700 billion, sounds like a pretty big number, but the government doesn't have a very good track record with coming in where they project, so I'm afraid that that's going to be much higher than that. And second of all, I'm thinking that if we go ahead and bail these people out and sit there and hold the paper, doesn't that send the wrong message to businesses and so forth that at some point you can get upside down and the taxpayer will come in and bail you out? And I don't have a lot of faith that the government will be able to oversee the plan, and that we'll end up eventually making money on the deal, because that would be one of the only instances in history of that ever happening.
Doug, I think you make two very excellent points there. As one other caller had implied, I don't personally have a confidence in the $700 billion figure either, which is another one of the huge concerns that I have about this approach. But you've raised another issue, which in the jargon back here is called moral hazard. Meaning, if you know that the government's going to step in and protect you, then you don't have to show any restraint, and you don't have to be as careful. And if the government continues to bail out those who engage in unjustified, sometimes illegal, and at least risky behavior that jeopardizes the entire economy, if you can get yourself in enough trouble that you jeopardize the economy, then the government will bail you out. And you are certainly correct that that issue, the moral hazard issue, is very real. That's one of the reasons, another one of the reasons, that I believe that the taxpayer should not be, under any plan we adopt, the taxpayer should not step into a position of being the first in line to assume any losses that occur. If you look at some of the actions that Hank Paulson has taken recently, let's take, for example, the AIG so-called bailout. In that bailout, the United States is probably going to come out, the taxpayer is probably going to come out of that transaction relatively well. In fact, most of the economic experts I talk to say that when AIG is finally wound down and major parts of it are liquidated, that the amount of money that the Treasury put into that will be not only repaid, but repaid with a handsome profit. And it's that way because the losses are going to be required to be taken by the shareholders and by the other private sector entities who engaged in debt relationships with the entity without doing it on proper market principles. And so in that case, the moral hazard principle is not there because the company and its shareholders will incur literally all of the losses that that company is going to have to absorb. The same kind of thing happened with Bear Stearns. The shareholders of Bear Stearns, even though the company was kept alive because the government facilitated a sale of it, and helped kind of provide the liquidity for the sale, the shareholders took a beating, and there certainly was no benefit to them of having had the mismanagement that they dealt with. So again, your point is very well taken, and it's another reason that I believe we must put the shareholders, the management, and the other debt holders who were willing to engage in risky debt relationships and risky debt transactions at the front of the line in terms of the losses that are going to occur to these companies, and not have the taxpayer be the one who steps in front of them in line to take the losses first.
The next question, we're going to Nampa. Kaylin, you have a question for Senator Crapo?
Hi, Senator Crapo.
Yes.
I appreciate your measured response to this bailout that I see as a threat to conservative American values, including a massive extension of government if we're truly end up buying $700 billion to $1 trillion worth of illiquid assets, as well as what you just addressed, the blow to the fundamentals of capitalism, such as moral hazard. But let's presume, as you've suggested and others, that this is necessary to happen to save a larger economy. Then why not direct the bailout at the mortgage holders who, if this is all based on illiquid assets based on foreclosed mortgages, why not direct the bailout to the mortgage holders themselves, so that then those mortgages can be repaid, those securities become liquid, they're no longer illiquid, and the banks are and financial institutions are secure. As it stands now, we bail out the big guys, but not the little guys. So the big guys are saved, and the little guys still lose their house.
Again, a very excellent question. And the answer is, again, multifaceted. First, we have already in Congress taken some major steps. Back when we authorized the necessary actions to put Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac into conservatorship, we also established a very strong new regulator for them. I should have pointed that out when I answered the earlier question about what we needed to do in our regulatory structure. And we also established some programs, both regulatorily and through statute, that facilitated mortgage workouts rather than mortgage foreclosures. And so to a certain extent, and it's happening already in hundreds of thousands of mortgages in the country, people are getting an opportunity to renegotiate their mortgages either by reducing the principal or extending the term or reducing the interest rate or a mixture of those things so that they can keep the mortgage alive. And maybe there will be a little loss on the original terms of that mortgage, but those homeowners will get a stay in their home, and the owners of those assets or the securities into which those assets have now been placed will get the large part of their return back out of that mortgage. And so the first part of the answer to your question is that we've already started the process of doing that. There are millions of more mortgages out there where we need to address that. And that, I believe, is going to be a part of the whatever workout solution that Congress addresses here. As a matter of fact, I actually believe that the approach that Hank Paulson and Ben Bernanke are talking about would also end up doing this, because if the U.S. Treasury holds the underlying securities for these mortgages, there would be an incentive for them to engage in a rapid process of workouts. The reason it can't be done in the way it was back when we had the savings and loan crisis is because these mortgages are now securitized, and there are many owners of them. There are parts of securities that where you may own a 10% interest in many different mortgages, and then another company owns another 10% interest in it, and so forth. But there are managers of these mortgages who can do the workouts and can be authorized to aggressively engage in them. And I believe personally that that is a, regardless of how we approach this, whether it's the Hank Paulson approach, whether it is the type of approach that I've been discussing as a possible alternative, or something new that Congress will come up with, a key part of it is going to have to be facilitating the workout of as many mortgages as we can. Now, let's be honest, though. There are some people who just got into mortgages that they are not going to be able to sustain. And in those circumstances, a different solution is going to have to be provided. But the people are not going to be able to stay in their house, and those houses are going to need to go back into the inventory. I suspect Congress will also probably end up trying to find some way to create a soft landing in those situations so that we don't have any more economic disruption than possible.
Okay, we've only got about 10 minutes left in the call, and we've got lots of folks still in the queue. We're going to go to Boise to Jane. You have a question for Senator Crapo, Jane?
Oh, yes. I read in the news that it would be likely that you would need consultants to decide which entities to bail out, which firms to save by buying up their illiquid assets, and that for these consultants you would be likely to use people in the banking industry or on Wall Street, and it seems to me that that would be a conflict of interest. And I want to know if that's an accurate portrayal of what will happen, or if you have something else in mind.
Well, it depends on whose plan you're talking about. If you're talking about the plan that has been proposed by the President and the Secretary of Treasury and the Chairman of the Federal Reserve, that actually is not going to happen, because they are not going to be bailing out specific companies. What they're going to be doing is buying classes of assets from many companies, and by that I mean hundreds of companies across the economic sector, not just on Wall Street. And they will not pick the companies. The way they are proposing to do this is to have what they call a reverse auction. And we're sort of trying to figure out what that means, but basically that's where the government would say, we will buy this class of assets, and then companies from all aspects of the economy who hold those assets can bid into the offering and say, we will sell you, you know, our distressed asset for this price. And another company would say, we'll sell you our distressed asset for this price. Mm-hmm. And there becomes a negotiation among the sellers as to what the price for these assets will be that the government will buy, and the lowest price is the one the government will take. The bottom line there, though, is if you approach it the way that Hank Paulson is talking about, they won't be picking specific companies and bailing them out. He says he wants to get away from that model and instead buy asset classes. Others, like myself, are talking about a more focused approach, focusing on those entities in the economy who need the liquidity in order to stay alive and who we cannot let fail. And later on, by the way, we're going to need to develop some regulatory approaches to the issue of too large to fail. And but that's going to have to come after this situation, in my opinion. So if we do have a plan adopted where there are specific companies selected, then you are right. Then the issue of conflict of interest among the people who will make the decision as to which companies get assisted clearly raises the question of conflict of interest. And I believe because of that, one of the earlier callers had talked about a board being set up to do this, like the Resolution Trust Corporation that was set up for the savings and trust loan situation. I then believe that we do need a board or some kind of a very highly oversight, you know, something with a lot of regulatory oversight put into place so that there is no question about the fact that we will not have conflicts of interest being played out in the selection of what companies are assisted.
All right, our next question, we're going to Pocatello to Mark. You have a question for the senator on the bailout.
Yes, Senator Crapo, thanks for taking my call.
You're
Hello?
Welcome. Yes.
My question is if the $700 billion bailout, and basically that makes every American a shareholder, and I was wondering, after the economy stabilized and the things started picking up, if the shareholders, the American people, could see a tax cut for their investment.
Well, actually, it's a very good question. It depends. Again, it depends on whose plan or just what the structure of the plan is. The shareholder type approach is what was used with the AIG situation, and the taxpayers will get a return on their money in that case, in my opinion. But if you're talking about the plan proposed by Secretary Paulson and the President, they're not talking about the taxpayers becoming owners or shareholders of the company. They're talking about the taxpayers becoming owners of assets. But it's the same principle, and the answer to your question is, if the federal government does follow this plan and does buy, let's say, $700 billion worth of distressed mortgage securities, the idea that Hank Paulson believes in and what he believes and is telling us is that, yes, indeed, if the government will hold these assets to maturity or for a sufficient period of time for the market to stabilize and rebuild, then the value in these assets will return significantly, and the taxpayers should be able to get all or most of their money back. Now, a lot of people doubt whether that will actually happen, and I don't know, but that is actually a very good point to point out. This proposal is not direct spending. It is purchase of assets that, in theory, have the potential to grow back significantly in value if the economy comes back.
All right, I think we have time for just one more call. We're going to go to Pocatello again. To Daniel, you have a question for Senator Crapo.
Yes, the news has also been talking about the fact that they're concerned about increased defaults on auto loans and other consumer loans. And I guess I just have great concern that simply we haven't hit bottom yet, that there are going to be more defaults and that the problem is much bigger than at least the Bernanke has been and the President have been explaining to us.
Well, actually, you are correct. One of the reasons that Secretary Paulson and Chairman Bernanke asked for $700 billion is because they wanted to be sure that they got the liquidity out there into primarily the mortgage industry, into the mortgage securities. But they also indicated that they felt it may be necessary for them to do some purchases in some other areas, such as car loans or credit card security debt securities and so forth. The point is this, and you're absolutely right. The ripple effect, or what I've said maybe the convulsion effect of what is starting to happen, will not be limited to the housing industry or to mortgage securities. If this occurs the way that Secretary Paulson has told us it's likely to play out, we will literally see the credit system in our country freeze, and virtually every part of our economy will start feeling this, and we'll start seeing the kind of shutdowns and shuttering effects that we are seeing now in the mortgage industry and beginning in the credit card industry and in the car loan industry. And so although the proposal is bold and does focus primarily on mortgage-backed assets, there is the real potential that it would have to expand, which goes back to the question others have asked about, is $700 billion enough? And frankly, that's, again, a very tough question to answer. Secretary Paulson believes that if we act boldly and act now, that it can work. And like I said, I still have some concerns about that, but this is a phenomenally difficult issue here that fortunately we have all parties coming together on to negotiate in, and I hope we will be able to do this in a truly nonpartisan way.
Well, if we were not able to take your call tonight, please stay on the line. At the end of this call, you'll be able to leave a brief message for Senator Crapo. Also, you can reach Senator Crapo at 202-224-6142 in D.C. or one of the seven state offices in Idaho. The website address is http://crapo.senate.gov. And we will be continuing these calls in the future. If you'd like to ensure that you participate in our next call, please sign up on the website. There's an icon on the front page that you can click on to provide the information. Pretty much all we need is your name and your phone number. You can also sign up for Senator Crapo's monthly e-newsletter. And Senator Crapo, you've got about a little over a minute that you can do a quick wrap-up.
Well, from the discussion that you've heard tonight, obviously this is very critical, but also very complicated. And I just want to assure you all that although I'm not convinced yet that we have the right plan on the table, I will work with the president, with the political parties, both sides, the House and the Senate, and with our presidential candidates to find a solution where we can build consensus and take the kind of action, I think it will take some bold action, that will help us move forward and solve this problem. My principle is going to be not putting the taxpayer at the front end of the line in terms of taking the losses and making this as limited as possible in terms of federal intervention, but nevertheless making sure that we do not allow the economic collapse to occur that is potential. And I thank you all for participating tonight.
Thank you for participating. We hope you found this call useful and informative. You are welcome to leave Senator Crapo a voicemail message following this call. Additionally, the audio from the full meeting will be posted on Senator Crapo's website should you wish to listen to it again or recommend it to your friends and family. Please join us again for the next quarterly iTown Hall meeting, which will probably be held in December. Good evening.